Castles in Spain, a serial in five parts by Edward Boyd, with Ray Brooks as Graham Mayer. Episode 3. Graham Mayer has been hired by Sandy Forrest, a wealthy elderly gentleman who once fought in the Spanish Civil War, to track down an old comrade who's disappeared. Mayer has severe misgivings, but prompted by Forrest's granddaughter Teresa, and armed with a list of addresses, he's flown north to Glasgow to begin the search for Jock Cameron. Drawing a blank with the first name on his list, Mayer returns to his hotel room, only to find a pair of special branch officers waiting for him with a lot of awkward questions about a man called Hanrahan.
Well, if there's no further business, will you both get the hell out of here and let me have my room back?
There's just one more thing, Mr. Mayer.
Let's hear it then.
Remember, nobody knows what this Hanrahan looks like. Nobody knows what name he's travelling under. So keep your door locked. And don't let anyone in you don't know.
In the merry month of May in the year 1902, Mount Pelee on the island of Martinique blew up. In the capital, Saint-Pierre, only two of the 30,000 population survived. One was a convict and the other a madman, and they survived because they were both locked up in cells. While I was trying to decide whether I was criminal or crazy...
Hello?
Is that you, Mayor?
I'm not sure.
What a terribly bizarre thing to say.
We live in a terribly bizarre world.
How's the weather up there?
Poised between bad and worse.
You sound as cross as two sticks, dear boy.
Does the name Hanrahan mean anything to you?
Not a thing.
Have the police been on to you about me?
Have you been sampling the local brew, Mayor?
How did you know I was here, Coleman?
Intuition, perhaps.
Did Forrest tell you?
No.
Teresa, perhaps?
My dear boy, Teresa wouldn't tell me the time if she had two watches. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to speak to her.
What makes you think she's with me?
A rather melodramatic note she left saying she was going up to Glasgow.
See me?
Well, I rather assume.
Why was the note melodramatic?
There was a little unpleasantness here yesterday which I'd rather not discuss.
Look, Coleman, I'm only someone that's been hired to do a job. I refuse to become involved, nor have I been involved to any greater extent than that. Do I make myself clear?
Tell Teresa I called.
Supermarket empires grow from primitive small village shops to multinational magnificence. Yet Lord Meatpaste, interviewed last night on television, declined to credit his success to monetarism, capitalism, or any other ism. Nor did he admit to more than usual ambition, to more than usual greed. The truth is, he told 10 million viewers, I got out of that small shop to avoid becoming embroiled in the dreary lives of my customers. I threw myself on the bed that looked as though a computer made it every morning. Lord Meatpaste, I whimpered. Where are you when I need you? When I woke up, it was dark, and so was the taste in my mouth. And I lay for a moment, meditating on the ultimate room service, where you could send out your problems, bafflements, complexes, and in due course have them returned to you, solved and neatly folded. And it occurred to me, depressingly, that somewhere, someone was already working on it. And feeling vaguely defeated, I took the lift to the ground floor and the dining room.
Are you a resident, sir?
Yes.
Could I have your name, sir?
Mayor.
Oh, yes, yes. You timed it nicely, sir.
I did?
Yes, the young lady has just arrived.
Then we better not keep her waiting.
This way, sir.
Hello, Teresa.
Sit down, Mr. Mayor. Oh.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. How long have you been in Glasgow?
Since last night.
So what have we done? Eloped?
I'm not in the mood for jokes, Mayor.
I'll make you an offer.
Let's hear it.
I'll tell you what's been happening up here. You tell me what's been happening in London.
terrible things have been happening in London.
Shall we talk about them first?
I hardly know where to begin.
You could begin with the rather melodramatic note Jocelyn Coleman says you left.
Was that how he described it?
His very words.
Nasty old queen.
There's something you haven't told me.
You're too cool, Mayor. Too bloody cool by half.
Maybe that's because I find myself caught up with such a bloody preposterous family.
Maybe we're preposterous because we have never really been a family at all.
And what particular bones am I supposed to pick out of that?
Why not accept it at face value?
Is it so very painful to talk about?
Who am I, Mayor? Who am I?
Take it easy. Tell me about this note Coleman mentioned.
It was a note to my grandfather telling him I was going to Glasgow because of something I had just found out about Coleman.
And what was that?
That he was selling off my grandfather's paintings, and I knew someone up here who could prove it.
Did you tackle Coleman about this?
Yes.
What happened?
There was a blazing row, and that was when he said he knew things about my grandfather that would send him to prison for the rest of his life. And if the truth were known, he wasn't my grandfather at all.
Coleman actually said that in so many words.
She got up and fled, leaving me hostage to the imaginations of the diners at the nearby tables. I made no attempt to follow her, content to sit there, ignoring the amusement, the disapproval, or whatever form of schadenfreude affected those who watched her sudden departure. So I sat on, thinking of the sadness of being a teenager, the melancholy of knowing nothing in practice. And I suddenly felt sorry for Teresa, but not much. After a while, it became obvious that she was not coming back. I grew bored with yuppie faces, young men with a kind of smooth suppleness, and all the calculating charm of well-groomed pickpockets, wearing their women like perfumed credit cards. So I went back to my room and made a telephone call.
Mayor Book Service?
Ah, oh, Arnold. I wondered how you were getting on.
Oh, learning all the time. Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
Is there a book called The Homosexual Kings of England?
There is.
Is it a rare book?
Not particularly.
There was this old lady...
Miss Hitler, I call her. Small, quiet-spoken, about 70, expensive tweeds.
That's her, all right.
Every bookseller in London knows her. She goes round to them all, always hunting down the same book.
What's so special about gay monarchs?
I think she finds them untidy, wants to put them back in the closet.
You mean she destroys the books?
That's why we call her Miss Hitler.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Mayor.
What is it, Arnold?
Teresa's up there with you, isn't she?
Teresa is up here. Teresa is not with me.
Sorry, it's none of my business.
What were you going to say about Teresa?
Does she know that her grandfather collapsed this evening? He's been taken to hospital?
I called reception and asked for her room number. Then sat around trying to compose a formula of words that would somehow make palatable what could never be anything else than unpalatable. But when I called her room, there was no reply. And just as I hung up, there came a knock at the door, and I went and swung it open, and found myself staring at two strangers. They were both as blonde as peroxide could make them, both dressed in current teenage black that made them look like jolly undertakers. They swaggered past me into the room, and then the boy spoke.
Go on, say it.
Say what?
Say what you're thinking.
Consider it said.
You're supposed to say we look like the Midwich Cuckoos.
Are you sure you've got the right person?
Your name's Mayor, isn't it?
Right.
Grandson of Big Gus Mayor.
I don't usually think of myself in that way, but right again.
Jeez, for a minute I thought that old Henderson had got it wrong.
Ah.
You know who we are now?
You're the two with the Spanish War project.
That's right. We're trying to get Channel 4 money.
I thought Henderson was talking about a school project.
You must be joking. School is where they murder you and send the body to university to be embalmed.
You like the idea of a Spanish War movie?
Great.
Pat and I represent New Wave Scottish Cinema.
Delighted to make its acquaintance.
Paul is the director, and I'm the producer.
And old Henderson?
He says he intends to come to our opening night.
He asked us to apologise to you.
For what?
I think he felt he'd been a bit short with you.
I thought he was a tired old man.
Well, maybe he picked up the vibrations.
Maybe he did.
Anyway, he asked us to pass on this information about Jock Cameron.
Yes?
The last he heard, Cameron was working in a building site near Kettering.
How long ago?
Oh, but 4 years. Old Henderson reckons he's moved on since.
Oh, great.
He wrote down this name and address for you. He says if anyone knows where Jock Cameron is, it's likely to be her.
And off they went, the Midwich Cuckoos, carrying lightly their self-appointed burden of Scottish Cinema Mark II, their hopes as bright as their hair. I looked at the shred of paper they had left me, which looked as though it had been carelessly torn from a child's exercise book. It bore, in pencil, a name and an address and a telephone number.
Agnes McLaughlin speaking.
My name is Mayor, Mrs. McLaughlin.
Miss McLaughlin.
I beg your pardon.
What did you say your name was?
Mayor. M-A-Y-E-R.
I don't think I've ever known anyone with that name.
Miss McLaughlin, your name has been given me.
Oh, dear. You're not going to offer me a gold Rolls Royce or a holiday in Tenerife or tour. Something equally ridiculous.
Nothing like that.
Who gave you my name anyway, Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Henderson.
Oh, I know several Mr. Hendersons.
This one lives in the Valleyfield residential home.
Oh, that'll be Hughie Henderson. Now, what can I do to assist you, Mr. Mayor?
I'm trying to find a man called Jock Cameron.
Yes?
Mr. Henderson said that if anyone was likely to know where Cameron was, it was you.
I see.
I'm not a policeman, Miss McLaughlin.
What else are you not?
Well, I'm not from the DHSS, and I'm not from the Inland Revenue, and I'm not a hitman from the Mafia.
Tell the truth and shame the devil, Mr. Mayor. What are you?
I'm a bookseller.
Oh, well, this I must hear about.
Whenever it's convenient.
Why don't you come along now?
If you're sure it's not too late.
At my age, Mr. Mayor, beauty sleep is no longer a consideration. You have the address?
Great Western Road.
See if you can pick up a pint of milk somewhere.
The taxi man found a late-night shop, and we bought milk from a sleepy Indian. Then we were on a wide, wide road that surged into the darkness. A public road that still managed to convey an air of conscious worth and almost pharisaical privacy, which even got to the taxi driver.
Been in Glasgow before, Jimmy?
First time.
You know you've gone to a famous address.
What's famous about it?
It's a listed building.
Really?
Designed by Greek Thompson.
Do I get thrown out of the cab if I say I've never heard of him?
Well, not in this economic climate.
Who was he anyway?
Ah, he's a headbanger. Victorian architect. Everything he designed turned out to be a Greek temple.
Including this place I'm going?
Ah, it's not so bad. Matter of fact, I quite like it.
What kind of people live in Greek Thompson buildings?
People with old money.
The taxi deposited me at the foot of a row of steps and then shot off as though unwittingly it was trespassing on something 2,000 years earlier than itself. I climbed the steps towards the Corinthian pillars that stood on either side of the doorway like sentinels that had been turned to stone. As I reached the door, it opened with a strange whirring sound and let me into an enormous hall that was tiled in black and white. She was standing in that huge hall, small and dumpy, like a miniature chess piece on an overgrown chessboard. Her face was smooth, her hair neatly tended. She was very much her own lady, in her own house.
Ah, you managed to get some milk.
Glasgow seems to have an abundance of handy little late-night shops.
Well, let's go into the kitchen, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
I spend most of my time in here.
You live alone in this enormous house?
I rent out the top two floors. Not quite what you expected, Mr. Mayor.
Let's say I don't see Jock Cameron here.
Oh, Jock Cameron has never set foot in this house.
But you knew him?
At one time. I knew Jock Cameron's body more intimately than I knew my own.
You were?
No, Mr. Mayor. We were not.
Perhaps you'd better tell this in your own way, Miss McLaughlin.
Yeah, perhaps it might be better. Oh, wait. Please sit down.
Thank you.
How much do you know about Jock Cameron?
Very little, actually. I've seen a letter.
Mm-hmm. What kind of picture do you have of Jock Cameron?
I see him as a superb fighting soldier.
Superb fighting soldiers are ten a penny. Cameron was something more.
How much more?
I don't want to sound like an old woman rambling on.
We agreed you should tell this in your own way.
In that case, let me make you some coffee.
Everything she did, all her movements, everything was deft, precise, economical. In a strange way, unsentimental. She was at one with herself, had not let life rule her, and not dreamed futile dreams, had not demanded more than was on offer. She had balanced her giving with her taking, and had therefore aged well. She still believed in something, and if that something turned out to be God, then fair enough. And if it didn't, well, as the man said, what's in a name?
The first time I saw Jock Cameron was in Kingston, Jamaica.
Thank you. That would be about 1930.
Oh, you know about that.
Only from books. That's why talking to you is so valuable. Everybody else seemed to assume I would get it all from books.
Well, a lot of it is on record.
Miss McLaughlin, I feel closer to Jock Cameron in this house than I ever have done.
I think that's the nicest thing that's been said to me this long time.
I understand that Cameron was in the British Army at that time.
He was.
And he was court-martialed and found guilty of mutiny.
Oh, there was a strong feeling that he was made the scapegoat.
What were you doing in Kingston at the time, Miss McLaughlin?
My father was an army officer.
Ah. Was he sympathetic to Cameron?
Oh, far from it. My father was a very harsh and limited man. He believed in king's regulations the way better men believed in the Bible. I don't think they breed people like him anymore.
I wouldn't be too sure of that.
I sincerely hope you're wrong.
You said you saw Cameron in Kingston?
Once.
Can you remember the occasion?
It was the day they sent him off the island to start his prison sentence in the UK. I was down at the harbour, watching the black kids diving for pennies. And suddenly I heard this commotion and ran over to see what was happening. Left, right, left, right. Bags of swagger. Bags of swank. About a dozen of them with fixed bayonets escorting this one man. Then they halted at the gangway. And this dangerous man looked straight at me. I was holding a flower. I remember a bright red thing. He looked at it and smiled. "That's a bonny flower you've got there, hen," he said. Suddenly, I don't ask me why, I threw the flower to him. He caught it and then he was hustled onto the ship. My father heard about the flower and gave me a terrible thrashing.
Did you ever meet Cameron again?
7 years later.
Where?
Harama.
What were you doing there?
Oh, I was a nurse.
A nurse?
I thought we were talking about Jock Cameron.
We still are, in a way.
Shall I save you from saying something foolish?
If you feel you must.
Oh, I do, I do. Any moment now, we'll be getting all that claptrap about my background, my advantages, and being worthy of better things.
All right, then. Why did you become a nurse?
I suppose becoming a nurse was my form of mutiny. I think that when you're brought up the way I was, you soon saw the darker side of empire, the hypocrisy behind the white man's burden, the greed and arrogance at the back of pomp and circumstance.
So you were making a deliberate political choice?
I became a nurse to escape from a thoroughly repressive family background, which I am not prepared to discuss any further.
I'm sorry.
Fine.
So the second time you met Cameron was in Spain?
It was hard not to. He was all over the place. I don't think I've ever met anyone with such energy.
But you still managed to see quite a lot of him.
Well, he kept getting wounded and I always seemed to be patching him up.
Did you ever mention the flower to him?
No, I never did. Nor did he ever mention it to me.
Not consistent with his macho image, perhaps?
No. That is unworthy of you, Mr. Mayor. Let me tell you what happened near a place called Brunetti.
Nurse McLaughlin.
What's bothering you?
Can I have a wee word with you?
Right, Cameron. What's on your mind?
I've found a baby.
You've what?
I've found a baby.
Oh, I could walk outside and find a dozen abandoned babies in 5 minutes.
This one's special, but...
Oh, they all are.
Well, I delivered them myself.
Oh, damn it, Cameron. Is there no end to your versatility?
I can turn my honey mess things if I have to.
So it would appear. Where did this happen?
In a shell hole.
Oh, where else? What was a pregnant woman doing in a shell hole anyway?
Killing fascists.
I'm assuming that she's dead.
I couldn't get the bleeding stopped.
Well, what do you intend doing with the child?
I'd like you to look after him for a wee while.
For how long?
Until I arrange to get him to Scotland some way or other.
Look, Cameron, that might not be easy.
I'll manage.
Did he manage?
Oh, yes, he managed all right. But what happened to him after that, Mr. Mayor, is somebody else's story. Whoever that somebody else is.
As I walked away from the theatrical steps of Greek Thompson's listed building, an iconoclastic Glasgow moon shrugged aside a curtain of tattered clouds and cast a cold northern light on its pillared pomposity, making it seem more Thompson than Greek. I found it suddenly gimcrack, spurious, an unreal domicile for an old lady who had known real blood, real suffering, and real death. You always know when you're being watched. Some ancient instinct spreads its slow tension, preparing your body for an unseen treachery. The thrust of a knife, the whistle of a spear, the sudden crack of a gun. Eyes focused on you like a burning glass. My mind was flooded with violent sounds and images, which had the odd effect of destroying surprise when the car drew up beside me.
Do you like walking in the rain, Mr. Mayor?
It's an eccentricity I share with Greta Garbo.
We want to talk to you, smartass.
Who could refuse such a gracious invitation?
Get into the car.
Rather late for visiting, Mr. Mayor?
I thought so too. But she insisted.
Who is she?
My old nanny.
Patience is a virtue, Mr. Mayor. One that Inspector McNeil is not noted for.
Spoken like a true honours graduate.
I'm not an honours graduate, Mayor.
Not even battle honours.
You're not as clever as you think you are, Mayor.
It only looks like that in the present distinguished company.
In a moment, I'm going to drag you outside this car and beat the hell out of you.
The last reason of the king is the sword.
It doesn't have to be.
But you'd stand by and watch it happen.
If necessary.
What happens if I turn out to be an honours graduate in karate?
Somebody else will be along to ask the questions. Somebody better equipped. Well, what's it to be?
The lady I was visiting is called Miss McLaughlin.
There are other names on the door.
She rents out the top two floors.
She's an old friend of yours?
I met her for the first time tonight.
Why were you visiting her?
Business.
That covers a multitude of sins, Mr. Mayor.
Or no sins at all.
What was your business?
Well, if you check me out, you'll know that I run a bookshop. It's called The Bookworm.
We know all that.
I also run a sideline in rare and unusual
books. Pornography, eh?
I'm afraid you'll have to go elsewhere for that.
For God's sake, will you stop it, you two?
Tell him to stay inside his warrant card.
Can we get back to your reason for visiting Miss McLaughlin?
Her father was a military man, a career soldier. Not famous or distinguished as a soldier, but modestly celebrated in bookselling circles for his collection of books on military history. Specialist stuff, but extremely valuable. When he was called to the Great War Office in the sky, Miss McLaughlin fell heir to the collection, but until now she has managed to keep it intact.
And this collection is the reason that brings you up here?
That's the main reason. Apparently she's been having a rough time financially over the past few years, and the word is out that she might now be prepared to let the collection go if the right offer was forthcoming. I came up to check this out, you see, and put in a bid if the rumour turned out to be true.
We have ways of confirming this, Mayor.
Be my guest.
You said that this collection of books was the main reason for coming up here. That suggests there were others.
They probably don't matter.
We're not interested in probabilities, Mayor.
Possibly not. But I'm sure you'd be even less interested in the fact that I felt I had been working too hard and owed myself a break.
Who is J.C., Mr. Mayor?
J.C.?
Yes.
Jeremiah Clark, Jimmy Crickets, Jim Collins.
We're talking about postcards.
Postcards?
Found in your hotel room, all addressed to the same person and all signed by the same person.
J.C.
Oh, Jock Cameron.
Ah.
You probably came across a list of names, too.
We did.
I hope you'll find it more useful than I did.
Jock Cameron, Mr. Mayor.
What is your interest in him, Mayor?
I suppose you might call it purely academic.
In what way?
What do you know about the Spanish Civil War?
Not a lot.
Surely you must at least have heard of a book called For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Of course. And I once had a dog called Ernest Hemingway.
A bull terrier, no doubt.
What the hell has all this to do with Cameron?
Jock Cameron fought in the Spanish Civil War, with great distinction.
Mr. Mayor, are all booksellers as long-winded as you?
I'm trying to give you the complete picture.
We'll settle for the postcards.
Well, the postcards belong to a friend of mine who's a kind of Spanish Civil War buff. For years now, he's had this ambition to write a biography of Jock Cameron. He met Cameron, who raised no objection, but then the trouble began.
What trouble?
Well, you see, Cameron's something of a wandering boy, always on the move, here, there, everywhere. My friend could never pin him down long enough in one place for any useful discussion to take place. Cameron kept in touch with him by postcard. Here I am in Swansea, or Drumner Drocket, or wherever. Fascinating, but useless for what my friend had in mind.
What about the list of names?
Cameron was with the International Brigade in Spain. So were all the people on that list.
This friend of yours supplied you with the list?
Right.
Why?
The idea was that one of them might know where Cameron is now.
How many of them did you visit?
One, an old sourpuss called Henderson.
Did you get anything from him?
Only a flea in my ear.
So you have no idea where Cameron is?
No more than you appear to have.
There's something you should know, Mr. Mayor.
Really?
It's about the postcards.
Yes?
Each of these postcards came from a place where there'd been a bomb outrage.
Coincidence, perhaps.
The postmarks indicate that they were posted round about the dates of the bombings.
That, Mayor, is why we want to talk to Jock Cameron.
In episode 3 of Castles in Spain by Edward Boyd, Graham Mayer was played by Ray Brooks, with Alexandra Matthey as Teresa, Kerry Wilson as Inspector McNeil, Sybil Wintrop as Nora McGill, John Westbrook as Jocelyn Coleman, Yvonne Gillen as Agnes McLaughlin, John Hannah as Jock Cameron, Ian Thompson as Arnold, Caroline Guthrie as Paula, Richard Jameson as Pat, and Gordon Reed as the waiter and the taxi driver. The director was Patrick Rayner.